I'm Melissa Law, Head of Marketing at POC, and today I'm joined by POC CRO, Helen Slaven, who's been on the podcast before. Hi, Helen.
Hi, nice to be here, Melissa.
Wonderful, great to have you again. And our special guest, Sarah McVitie, who is actually co-founder of Dressipy. So hi, Sarah.
Hi there, thanks so much for having me. Wonderful. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, really great to have you, thank you. So using AI, Dressipy helps retailers to show each visitor the items they're most likely to buy and keep. Dressipy does the heavy lifting so that their customers, who are a variety of retailers, including River Island, LK Bennett and John Lewis, to stay ahead of the competition and enjoy higher profits, which I'm sure will be very interesting to a lot of our listeners. So something that we're going to explore in this episode. But first, I'm going to ask Sarah to introduce herself a little bit more, maybe talk a bit more about Dressipy and a bit about your background, Sarah, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So hi there, I'm Sarah, one of the co-founders at Dressipy. And at Dressipy, what we do is we build AI and predictions very specifically for fashion, apparel and sportswear retailers. I think understanding that it's a very dynamic space, one where it's a very emotional purchase, so it needs a very different construct and a very different level of AI that feeds into that. And we've been doing that for almost a decade, scarily, but really understanding the why behind the buy, and that's the key thing for us. So understanding what is it about the products that needs to be understood. And once you understand the products at a very detailed level and a very customer-centric view, you can really understand the intent behind why people are making that purchase decision. So we build predictions both in terms of the front end, so making sure people see the right products in the right context, in the right time, and also further on down the supply chain, so making sure retailers can produce what they will sell, so they end up producing a far better collection and the right volumes, the right store allocation, the right size ratio, so they have a lot more profit and a lot less waste, which is another thing that we are very passionate about at Dressipy. My background, I started off in banking, spent some time in China, and then started my first business, which we sold to a US company, and then started this one about a decade ago. It's been a long journey. And obviously, we've been doing AI way before it was cool. We were headless way before it was cool. But actually, it's amazing that now the world seems to be catching up, which is fantastic. So, yes.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't surprise me that we're talking about AI today. But knowing that you've been doing this for a decade is probably a little bit more surprising than having, you know, a startup coming on here, or like a true startup. So I've got a couple of questions. I think your background's really interesting. Why retail then? Why retail as a move?
So interesting question. So my previous business, we built this service where you text a question, we'd text you back the answer, and we built a very cool little semantic search platform. And actually, when we sold that, I was talking to Donna, who is my co-founder, and we were looking at various different areas we wanted to work together, and we could see that everyone was going online, particularly so fashion retail is, but everyone was pushing product. No one was genuinely trying to service the customer. And because it's a very different kind of purchase decision, and we're all different sizes, shapes, heights, weights, genders, we have different, it's so dynamic in terms of, you know, before I had kids, then I've got kids, I'm working mum. So all of those things mean that my requirements and my intention is changing all the time. So it requires a very different level of data, and it requires a very specific kind of, you need to train the AI very specifically on the domain to get meaningful results. And actually, if you're using, I think, you know, the great thing about now is that AI is everywhere, right? I mean, everyone has AI, but understanding that there's AI that is generic, and then there's AI that is trained specifically to understand your domains, whether that domain is lawnmowers or fashion or books or whatever it is, there will be things that are specific about your domain that really matter. And yeah, another very good example in the fashion space is if you take trend, for example. So typically, a lot of the AI or machine learning that people will be using will be looking at past purchases or clicks to predict future purchases. But if you've got a customer who loves to follow trend, then maybe they hated big collars last season. But if big collars are a key trend this season, they won't just like them, they're going to go buy big collets, right? So understanding which of your customers have a propensity to buy into trends, because actually in that case, what they bought last year is irrelevant. They're never going to buy them again. So understanding how you treat the data differently based on the type of customer you have. So another good example is, you know, as if you're buying, I always use lawnmowers, it's not a very good example, but yeah, you're buying a bunch of lawnmowers, you can buy 1,000 units, go and sell your 1,000 units, job done. You're buying 1,000 units for dress, you've got to figure out how many of the size 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 to buy. And if you get that size ratio wrong, then you get what's called fragmented stock that's hard to shift, and that's what causes a lot of the margin erosion. So understanding kind of the bulk of your revenue comes from your top 20, 30% of your customers. And so understanding how do you make sure that you know their size, right? So if you've got something which is fragmented, you've got a customer who has a high propensity to buy into that sort of product, you can still sell it at full price. You do not have to shift that down to the discounting. So it's those sorts of things that make a big difference and allow us to really outperform in the space that we're in.
And it all seems perfectly sensible, and almost in a way you're being quite prescient in how you're thinking about customers first. But for many fashion and apparel retailers, that's not their background. They've come from a world of, we buy stuff, we sell stuff, we buy stuff, we sell stuff. It's been about the stock and not about the customer engagement. And I guess when you've got stores, there probably was no real understanding of what, who and what was buying.
Well,
it's just the fact they went.
You couldn't stalk someone around a store, could you? But, and not that you do that now, but I suppose what's different now is that, I say, what we're seeing, fundamentally, there's a big, I think that the whole retail, we're in a whole new era of retail right now. So Gen AI will be massive. Machine learning is now in the mainstream. You've got sustainability becoming an increasingly important part of how retailers perform. Inflation, cost of living, you've got cost of sales going up. You've got new entrants coming into the market that are really grabbing market share quite quickly. And so every retailer's replatformed, everyone's bought new tech, but nothing's moving the needle, right? So full price sell through rates are stuck. Return rates are now higher than they were pre-pandemic. So conversion rates are stuck. So understanding what is it, there's a structural change that needs to take place, and you're absolutely right. So where historically it's been an organizational led structure and experience, retailers, and that everyone talks about being customer centric, but they have to move to a customer centric experience. It's all about how the customer evolves. And genuinely understanding, not about segments, but how do you deliver for the intent of each individual customer? I think that's key.
And it's really interesting you say that about customer, because it's sort of our experience as well, that there's not always somebody on the board of a retailer who has the sole responsibility for the customer. Often it's fragmented, and we're finding quite generally that it's sometimes now lumped in with something. Either it's like digital is responsible for customer or marketing. But it's interesting when customers are put into marketing if their primary focus is acquisition, because it actually sets itself against it. And the best retailers that we see have really firmly understood the customer. And actually a lot of that, in many ways, has come out of grocery, because of their real understanding through their loyalty programs of understanding exactly what we shop, when we shop, and how we shop. It's a frequency thing. But it seems to us to have taken a while to have transcended into retail. Do you see that focus now towards really thinking of the customer first is going to help you in terms of your mission with retailers, or is there still a way to go?
I mean, I think it's absolutely key. But I think there is an organizational shift that has to take place. And I think if we look at we work with both the kind of back end BDM teams, we work with the front end teams, and they are unfortunately still very siloed. So you have your kind of buying and merchandising teams who are still typically working in Excel amazingly, and they're typically building their future forecast based on what they sold last year with a little bit. And then your trading team, who are then selling it, who have a whole different set of data, a whole different set of models to sell it. So that misalignment is partly what's causing that profitability gap. So I think, to your point, having people who understand that this common set of customer understanding needs to go through the entire organization so that they're thinking holistically from a customer-centric point of view. I think that's the key thing that we're beginning to see, and I think that is beginning to shift. But I think it's making it easy. It's also a hugely complex transition. It doesn't need to be, but I think it's understanding how do you don't want to boil the ocean, right? So how do you dip your toe in and get started and prove and evaluate and kind of optimize on that level.
And what do you think the tipping point may be for people to take this more seriously?
I think they have to. I think you look at the likes of Shein, you think you look at the people who are succeeding and love them or loathe them. It's this.
The model's very clever.
But it's completely focused on the customer. So, yeah. I mean, Lululemon's another good example. Inditex, again, another amazing. I mean, so Inditex, their EBIT margins are 20%.
Yeah.
Amazing, right? So, but they have this amazing feedback loop with the customer all the time. And Shein, the guy who started it, he's an SEO guy.
I mean, he is. He's an SEO, very, very clever model.
So it's just about, I mean.
And always encouraging a marketplace with the suppliers to have short order runs. Yeah. So
really responding to the customer and understanding that customer centricity. And I think, that shift will become a necessity, actually. Yeah. And I think if you look at, so there's kind of growth at any cost and then there's profitable growth. And I think if you look at what's, and then everyone's talking about customer lifetime value, but nobody really knows how to build meaningful customer propensities to allow them to build that kind of making, what we say, what we kind of refer to with fashion is really looking at how do you make sure that you own a greater share of each customer's wardrobe. And therefore, to do that, you need to understand every customer at a much more detailed level.
Well, you need to own at least a lot of the customer to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, we see a similar thing in retailers who, thinking about own channel versus marketplaces, there was a great rush towards marketplaces. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but actually it can also be equally dangerous because you're effectively giving away that first party data to somebody else who's then going to do it. And you could, unless you've got a really good, strong trading agreement with them, and some marketplaces are stronger than the others, end up losing your best customers. And actually then, depending on what they're serving, the customer could actually start to lose them to another brand. So, at POT, we're always advocating, and for us, obviously, it's the app, being that central point for customer engagement, because you own that. It's a walled garden, you own the customer, you absolutely understand everything that they're serving, every single experience, and actually then to serve what you do through that seems to us to be the most perfect way of locking in the customer, and then actually, as you quite rightly said, improving your sell-through. And so it's no surprise to us that app performs so much better than mobile web and is in line with desktop, which, as you know, is a declining sort of piece of e-commerce. So,
and I think that's the beauty of the app as well, is that when you have that concentrated attention of the customer, which is, people have such limited attention spans now anyway, but to be able to then make it really about them. So if you take the fashion example, if you've got, you've got some customers who've bought a couple of things, and actually showing them what's in their wardrobe, showing them how to wear things with new things that they haven't thought about, looking at new season, I think it's about providing that level of service, which really, I suppose, reflects how we shop and how we want to shop. And so what are those moments throughout the year, throughout our timelines that matter, and how do we anticipate those and make sure that we're delivering for the customer. And I think that from a sustainability point of view is also key, because you bought those amazing jeans last year, but guess what, you can dress it up, so there's lots of ways you can still wear and you can maximize the use of your wardrobe rather than having all those things that sit
on. And it's so true, and I think it's going to have an impact on the return rate as well. I mean, we have things like a version of swipe to like, which actually means you can sort of scroll quite easily, put things you like, very much like a dating app, into a wish list. But now actually, if you go into a store, you can flip that list, which is very similar to what an Inditex will do as well. You can flip that list, geolocate, prompt outside the store, and then that wish list can be served with what's available in stock
exactly. So
it's absolutely perfect.
Available for, well, this is what's dropped, our new collection's dropped, it's in your local store.
Yeah, exactly.
Come and try it on. And I think it's connecting that omni-channel. I think, again, what we're seeing is, stores are back, right? Funny enough, we're social creatures and we like to shop. And I think, there's been a kind of 10% shift, but genuinely we enjoy the shopping experience.
Exactly.
And so if you can connect that omni-channel piece via the app, I think that's incredibly compelling as well.
Completely.
Yeah. It's interesting, just listening to you speak there, touching on quite a few things. And I feel like some of the common themes coming out there is agility. So being able to respond to the customer in a quick way. And I guess from a Dressippy example, Sarah, what you're there saying is being informed to make those right agile decisions and so on. And Helen, what you're talking about is then being able to surface those in a really personalised one-to-one way. Yeah. So you're right. Retailers are actually quite good at coming up with campaigns and all of these wonderful things. And we're really lucky to work with some customers who do know their customers really yeah. well. They have this deep knowledge. But having the right technology in place is really about making those things easier and making them happen in a much smoother way. And we know that we're quite privy to that not every retailer gets to add people to their teams, right, to take on these new projects and to make them happen. So how do retailers know where to focus their attention? What's really going to make those changes for them? If they're ideally, we want this shift in, you know, in retail to be really, really customer focused. But how can they start to even do that when, you know, there's maybe a multiple of things they're challenged with regularly?
Yeah, and I think I wouldn't want to be in a retailer's shoes right now. There's so many vendors who are flogging our wares, their wares, and I think trying to distinguish between the wheat from the chaff or the chaff from the wheat I think must be incredibly challenging. So I think from a retailer's perspective, I think most retailers have limited budgets at the moment. Most retailers have to really understand where they focus their time and their resources. And so from our point of view, what we're seeing is that we have a number of different products that retailers can consume, whether that's the kind of product attribution, the propensities, the personalization, or the kind of demand forecasting. But what's important to us is that it's a very, again, you're not boiling the ocean. You can dip your toe in, you can test it, prove it, evaluate it, and then integrate it. So it's a very, very light touch approach that doesn't require huge teams to do that. So I think the other thing that's a struggle is that because these retailers are often very siloed, it makes it very hard to track the kind of core KPIs that matter. And you have different teams that are focused on different KPIs, which can sometimes mean that you end up not focusing on the right things as well. So I think it can be quite challenging.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would agree with that. We were working with a retailer in the US, and the chief marketing officer there says they get about 2,000 emails a day from vendors. I mean, Melissa, you know, we've pulled right back from doing a lot of outbound emails. It's spam. It doesn't work. But the sad thing is, there's probably some really gold nuggets in some of those emails. So how do they get to see it, and how do they make those decisions? Well, I mean, I think for us, we find that our customers doing really well are the best referral point. There's nothing like talking to a peer in the industry and understanding how they crack that problem. So trying to bring people together has really helped us. And we were talking about our inbound is really strong conversion for us, because when somebody's really at the table and they want to explore apps seriously, and it is an all company decision, you know, you don't make a decision to move your customers into effectively the integration channel, we call it a super app, without some thought. So it requires a lot of buy-in across the board. And that's also where it falls down, because often, you know, CFOs particularly worried so much about, you know, limiting CapEx. It can be hard for these different competing sort of projects to get off the ground, but we're patient and we work through, and every time we do launch an app, actually almost, you know, 100% guaranteed, the retailer says, well, why didn't we do it before?
Yeah.
So we know it works. And I do feel for them, because there's just so many different things to contend with, and for them it must be like retail snakes and ladders at the moment. But app doesn't take a huge amount of investment up front. It does take some work, obviously, but you can go at your own pace and dial it up when you see it working. But I mean, it's interesting, there was an IDC study out end of 2023. It's the one they do where they survey all the CEOs, and they basically said, what are the priorities you're working on for this year? And number one is growth, and that's what everybody wants. They want to try and trade their way out of these scenarios, not cut costs. But then number two is seeing that digital is the way to it, which is obviously what we do. But then the third thing that they saw, and the biggest risk, is they don't have the skills in their teams to execute. So I do see that creates maybe a cautiousness because of that resource, and I think it's for us to sort of break through. But
I think that's, I mean, so I suppose where we can all lend some consultancy and actually kind of go in and help kind of upskill some of the teams internally, so that as they as they go on their journey of better data, better AI, better digital infrastructure, that the team becomes increasingly cognizant of what matters and how it works. And I think, you know, for us, we're very comfortable working with their internal data science teams and actually sharing some of that knowledge. So there's certain things that retailers want to do in-house and certain things that we just know it's going to take them a long time to get to. So it's about understanding, depending on the size of the retailer, how they want to work with an organisation like us and being very flexible and, to your point, agile about how we work with them.
I mean, it is true. I think we see a lot of the time we act more as consultants because if they, especially if they haven't done it before. And I guess the two big areas that we really find they tap into is one, we have app marketing specialists because it is a different channel. And that's really, really well used. And we have some great people there. And in fact, actually, we provide some of that as a complimentary service because we want them to get off the ground, you know, properly.
So
and,
how
and
is
really
it different then from a app marketing perspective to...
From a web marketing perspective, because you've got to navigate the Apple Store and the Google Store.
Oh, I see.
And it's effectively Apple search engine, so you've got to launch it. But then there's other things you can do and think about, so you've got to kind of like attribute back to the app, because otherwise you'll find your typical attribution will have everything touching Facebook or Google. And what's real, actually, for retailers is that when they really start to break this apart and they have an app, they can often then say, well, why are we attributing everything back to Facebook and Google? Because that customer maybe touched it when we know it's actually coming through the app and they've got that proof.
And actually, we've been doing a big piece of research with a lot of our clients. And, you know, the ROAS, the Google tax is a real thing, right?
It's
And this customer lifetime value piece is so important. And I think what's really interesting about what you guys do is really reducing the requirement to do that. You
That's
know,
right.
Keeping your customers and getting everyone to buy that second and third and fourth item and providing services that are like genuinely useful services that make me the best possible version of myself when it comes to buying clothes or you know, buying makeup or whatever it is that you're doing in the app. And those services keep me engaged and keep me buying more of those items. And I think that that's a huge, huge cost saving as well.
It's completely right. It's completely right. And, you know, actually the head of the Google App Store himself spoke at a conference for us and confirm that even shoppers through the apps on their store convert higher, spend more, and spend in line with AOV. Because to your point, we all want to be the better versions of ourselves. So, you know, what we do is just provide the framework to enable, you know, you or I or anybody just to find it easy and convenient to search through. And you provide all that intellect and data to serve me with the right things and give me the choices behind it. But actually, if you've got the ability to sell more and actually spend less doing so, then that's got to be a good outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And you took the words out of my mouth there, Helen. That's why I love this partnership so much, because we like to call it a sort of walled garden for your customers and definitely your best customers, where it's keeping them in that trusted position with you as a brand. It's keeping you away from that really competitive web market. And what you're doing, Sarah, with Dressapi is making sure that they're, when they're in that walled garden, you're servicing them with the right stuff all the time, however long they're with you. Like you say, you know, I'm definitely not dressing the same I was, you know, 10 years ago.
I know.
So it's
no high heels for me, that's
That's right. It's about that longevity, that relationship, and keeping it going, that customer lifetime value.
But also showing your customer that you understand that.
So we
have a... We have a kind of very advanced identity mapping, but understanding that, you know, if you're on John Lewis, that we can see that because of the way I shop, I've got two kids who are currently 6 and 10.
Yeah.
So next year they're going to be 7 and 11. Mm. And I've got a husband or, you know, a partner. And you can see, if I look at how I shop for myself, you can see that I do some sport. I obviously
That's
have
great.
A very casual working, I don't have any corporate. So understand, I very rarely buy for kind of smart occasions, but all of that allows us to create these identities around every profile that we create. And I think that being able to then show the customer that you know them that well, and that you can show them, I think understanding the intent as well. So, you know, you get customers who come in, and you've got regular customers, and if they're coming in to browse, they're looking at new in, and they want to see lots of gorgeous things that inspire them to make that kind of impulse purchase. Whereas if they're coming in, they're searching or they're filtering, they're looking for something specific. So show them the best 10 dresses or the best 10 tops or the best 10 bags, whatever it is that is within that. But again, it's being cognizant of what those different journeys are and being able to surface that in a way that's meaningful.
Yeah. And just as a consumer listening to you both speak, it really does feel like table stakes these days. You mentioned about the retailers who are being really successful with this now, Shein, Inditex and so on. You know, we all know they have apps. We all know that they really understand their customer. And as you pointed out at the start, it's a really competitive space. Yes, stores have opened up again. So we all know that the effort that retailers put into their store experience, knowing they want to pull you in from the high street, that really they should be thinking about that from a digital experience as well, and how you connect those two. So I wondered just how, you know, that it feels like that seismic shift is sort of dependent on these technology decisions that they make. And we know that AI is very much being pushed out there now. But I feel that a lot of it is around cost savings as well. And I know that you have some cost saving benefits, as do we, from an app provider, as we said, around that web spend. But it feels contradictory to those growth goals that you pulled out, Helen, from the IDC survey. It sometimes feels contradictory. And again, you can have both, I think. It's about choosing those right solutions.
Absolutely. I think again, if you take a step back, and if an organisation, rather than just picking off a bit of AI here or a bit of data here, I think if you take a step back and you look at it as a kind of organisational shift, then as you put the right data in place, and I think this is another key issue that we see, is that people buy the AI but they don't get their data house in order. And if your data is unstructured and inconsistent and you don't have the right taxonomy or the right understanding of what that data needs to look like, it's garbage in, garbage out. So you're actually exacerbating the problem. But so what's interesting about getting that data strategy and that AI strategy, when you think it through from start to finish, is it creates its own budget. So you should be able to test and learn, understand the revenue and EBIT margin benefit, and then that creates its own. So it should be self-perpetuating. Mm-hmm. It should allow you to release that extra cash. And if I look at some of the work we do down the supply chain, just optimizing the buy and the volumes, I'll give you a scary stat, but 60% of all clothes that are produced in the UK end up in a landfill within a year of being produced, right? Half of that is the retailer producing the wrong stuff. And half of that is the consumer chucking out their fast fashion. So if retailers can produce what they will sell, that's a whole load of extra profit that goes into producing the right products, better customer experiences, better apps, all of those things. I think it's they need to have a kind of end-to-end approach to the whole piece. I think that's the key thing.
Yeah, and it's a very similar story with app, right, Helen? Is, you know, often we are able to actually build, 100% of the time we're able to build a really compelling business case for app, where it's around that incremental revenue, that additional revenue you will take from offering those customers a better experience. But actually, there's usually very clear cost savings in there, where you're not spending on your paid search and your paid advertising on the web and perhaps reacquiring your existing customers.
I mean, that's right. And there's also the link if for the loyalty, or even actually for their active CRM, because for many retailers, you know, without having an app, their primary mode of contacting their customers is still via email, which we just talked about earlier. It's pretty much spam.
Very effective.
Spam for us, spam for them. And, you know, I don't know how many times you get emails from retailers now. So choosing not to do that, there's also perhaps a cost of other things. Now, there's a beauty to creating hard copy brand books. It's lovely. Mm. But I get so much spam mail from catalog companies, which I just throw in the bin. I mean, A, it's really bad in terms of, you know, sustainability. But secondly, that's completely wasted marketing, and it's expensive to do. And it's sort of like door dropping stuff. So really thinking through how you could reinvest that money. And there's a fear of it, because you may get a little bit of conversion. And we've been, you know, working with retailers where they've said, you can't touch that. or please don't touch my email conversion when you put the app. And we'll build the business cases without it. And then we launch the app, and then the boards will say, well, that was silly. Why do we care about that? Let's just chuck email in because this channel is working better. So we're really cautious to protect the things that are important to the business at the time. And just suggests that you start gently, and usually it builds its own momentum. It's just exactly. Getting over that first line. So
I think that it's always a tendency to overcomplicate, whereas actually I think you just need to start simply and start with the simplest way to prove
that's
the case
right.
And prove the value, and then you can add as much complexity as you like going forward. But it's about keeping it simple to start with.
It is, right, and it's the biggest...
By the way, I'm a fine one to talk because I tend to get very excited by shiny things. So.
Well, no, it is the biggest thing that prevents actually some of the app projects that we have from getting going, is that they start off quite rightly, quite cautiously about it, then they buy into it, and then you have this massive enthusiasm about everything you can do with an app. Yeah. And then there's this everything, we need to do it all now. And, it's probably 2 or 3 years of roadmap stuff, and they probably spent 10 years building their website. And it's very difficult then. And then actually you can say, it's a bit difficult, a bit overwhelming, and then they step back. So we do see that, deferral because of it. And our advice is always, you're rewarded within the app in the stores for incrementality, not one big drop. Actually, it boosts your sort of like rating by jumping new features. So you could actually do it feature by feature and make a big marketing effort of it, and your customers
Absolutely.
Would love you for it.
I also think that using the app to drive that store channel, I think is, JD Sports is a very good example. Their whole piece is about using the app to get people into the store.
Completely.
And I think it's understanding how you use those technologies to really sweat your assets, to make every single bit of real estate, whether that's web or store, really work as hard as it can do for you. And I think that's kind of, again, when it's all contained like that, you're not having to compete and pay that Google tax. I think it's a very interesting way to deliver it.
And it's a good point. We have a US customer, very large over here now, beauty brand called Elf, Eyes, Lips, Face. And they're incredible. They've got the foresight for it. And the app for them is their key retention channel. But they're quite innovative with it. But the point is about, store and real estate. They don't have any stores. They don't have any at all. But what they do have is a big sort of wholesale production with people like Walgreens and CVS. And they recognize that whilst they were selling, they didn't get their data back. So I might be somebody who chooses to shop via the app, but I'll pop into over here, Superdrug or something like that, and may want to pick up a lipstick at the time. And so they now have this ability to scan the receipt in, say, Superdrug, upload it into
Brilliant.
The app,
Brilliant.
And then, of course, you get your Elf loyalty points
yeah.
as well. And they get a 360 picture of how I'm shopping.
Fantastic.
And, and that kind of foresight is exactly what we're thinking about. Really, really smart thinking, and brings the app into the store visit as well.
And it's those customers that are that engaged. If you've got a customer who's prepared to, when they go into Superdrug, to scan the receipt and put it in, those are the customers that you want to learn as much from, because it's people like that you want to get more
exactly.
of. And so there's so much more you can, again, understand about who the customer is, what their intention is, what kind of lifestyle do they have, what's important to them. And I think if they're getting people to actually do that, that's phenomenal, because that's just a huge, huge amount of insight.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. And just talking about that store connection, one of the things that springs to my mind is we recently published the video with Hobbycraft, who we're really proud to call a customer. And one of the surprising things that came out of their app launch was how much their store associates love the app. And they really see it as a companion to the customer in the app. And they apparently even thought, they built the app for the store associates.
That's
they
right.
enjoy it so much because they can really sit there side by side with the customer, look at the customer reviews, really advise on what the best product is. So again, putting that customer first, and all of a sudden it's not just the store associates' knowledge, but it's all the other customers that have left a review about this product.
Yeah, lovely.
And it's wonderful. So
they're a lovely business, and Jenny, who heads up customer experience there, talks about the app as the store companion, and that's such a lovely phrase. And they really know their customers, and they really understand the market that they're in, and the stores are really important. And I've never seen an app launch which has been celebrated so much by the store colleagues, and they drove that really, really well, as opposed to being seen as a threat because of store KPIs versus e-commerce KPIs. So they really brought, to your point, that organisational change and actually endorsed it across every single sort of unit, and it's been a joy to work with them.
Yeah, and I think my favourite quote from that video is actually going back to your point, Helen, again on the IDC survey, was Jenny starts off saying that the app has proven to be a real growth channel for them, and there's not many growth opportunities at the moment in retail, so it's definitely worth exploring in those areas.
Yeah,
and actually, again, springs to mind, there are businesses out there that just have so many SKUs, right? And he's going back to those data points and those decisions. How do they make those decisions when you're working with so many SKUs? And it feels, again, like a bit of a no-brainer in terms of leveraging AI.
Yeah, and
for
I think
that
SKU thing, again, it's that organisation of where the SKU data they have, and this is one of our big issues, is that the data they have on their SKUs, particularly in fashion, right, because it's completely unstructured, there's no standardisation, so it is horrific. I mean, it is like it's all over the place. And so without understanding how to put the right taxonomy around those features, and therefore how, when you've got that taxonomy, how that plays out to help you understand the context and the occasion and the emotion and the feeling and the propensities. And I'll give a very simple example, but necklines, right? So we add a lot of extra attribution to every product that we work with, but we've got 27 different necklines, and you've got a crew neck from right moment, you can't see the collarbone, a round neck, which is lower, and a scoop neck, which is even lower. Now, ladies with a large bust will return the crew neck 5% more than they will the other two. Now, if that isn't consistently understood, you don't find that kind of return propensity in the data. So it's things like that, and it's often understanding how combinations of features allow you to understand the customer better that's key as well. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
Wow, that was an in-depth conversation. I feel like we could talk about this for hours if I'm completely honest, but I'm very conscious of taking up too much of your time, Sarah. But I'd love to know, in terms of Dressipi, with what's going on in the market, we talked about the difficulties in retail, the cultural change. What are you excited about? What's next for Dressipi? Where do you see this going? And to you, Helen, as well, what is this sort of exciting horizon really for app?
I think what we're seeing, we've been doing a lot of work with all these CEOs, and I think there is this huge excitement about moving to this more customer-centric view. I think that there is an absolute will to do that, and there's an absolute desire to do that, but I think it's making it easy to make that transition. And I think what we're excited about is I suppose providing the data and AI infrastructure to allow them to do that in the way that suits them. So it's really opening up that piece so that retailers can really understand how to move their, in a simple, easy way, move their organization to a more customer-centric view, from designing the product to getting it produced to getting it on the shelf to selling it to post-purchase. And I think for us that's, and then making sure that there is minimal waste in the process as well. That's our kind of key driver.
Sustainability, as you said, is such a key driver now, it feels, for so many consumers as well, that it feels to be a driving force.
I think it is important. I think the consumer talks about it. I don't think they necessarily, I think it's, I mean, we really care about it, but I think legislation will make it a thing rather than the consumer. I think price is still, value is still predominant. I think buying sustainably is typically still a luxury, I think. I think, I mean, I think Shein is a very good example of, the flip side of that. So I think it's understanding, it is important, but I don't think it's as important on the consumer's mind as it should be.
You're putting in those things in place that when it becomes,
I think governments will end up legislating, and I think unless you have the data in place to be able to kind of respond to that, I think it will become a tax that you can't afford to pay, basically.
Fair enough. And Helen, what's exciting you about retail?
Yeah, I mean, for me about app, I think the most exciting, rewarding thing is that Gartner finally recognised in their hype cycle 2023 for customer experience that super apps are now the biggest hyped item. Now, that's not good because it's, you know, in their model, that still shows it's got about 5 years to go. But I think that recognition, because 2 or 3 years ago, Gartner weren't even covering it. And I feel that the exciting thing is it's no longer just about shopping and commerce. It really is about brand engagement. And actually that bringing together everything we talked about of engaging with your customers one-to-one, you know, sort of replacing all the other sort of forms of communication, being able to connect in the stores you've got them, bringing in loyalty, and all these other experiences that you can create close to the phone, including, of course, like personalization and wardrobe creation. Really exciting about the seriousness now of adoption of it. I think it's going to take time still. There's this big thing about, you know, you create a movement by one follower at a time. And I think the followers now and the people who are telling good stories about apps will hopefully create a movement very soon. So, the future is app.
Also looking forward to that. Absolutely. For sure. Okay, well, thank you very much, Helen. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you so much for
really appreciate you joining. I can't let you go just yet. We always have one question we ask every one of our guests as they come on the podcast, which is, do you have an app? Doesn't have to be a shopping app, but do you have an app that you would recommend to our listeners? Anything that makes your life more enjoyable or easier on a day-to-day basis?
Mine is definitely fitness ones. So I'm probably very boring, but I have my yoga app and I have my Strava app. So yeah, those.
Definitely a popular one for sure. I know there are many people out there that use Strava for sure. And what I think is really great about that is it creates a community as well, right?
Yeah, so. and it keeps me honest because all my friends are like,
exactly.
I'd like one more.
Have you got another one?
Well, last time I talked about my tennis app, which is very much like you, Swing Vision, but my favourite app at the moment is Vinted. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And currently, because I'm selling off all of my high shoes. And actually, it's this emotional purchase about letting go of clothes and seeing them on their way. So wrapping it in tissue paper and sending it to.
It's amazing.
But they
Vinted,
do it really, really Vinted well, I have really to good, say.
Well, I might as well throw a new favourite of mine in. I recommended this the other night at a partner event to someone, which is Twicket. An amazing app. Oh. It's somewhere where you can buy the resale of sold out gigs or shows, but at face value or less. So there's no hyping. So I was talking to, if this person is listening, very big Taylor Swift fan. So I said, keep an eye on it. But I'm not sure I hold much hope to them getting anyone who wants to give up the Taylor Swift.
I used it last night, actually. But I don't know.
Love it. I'm sure this will come out after my brother's birthday, but I managed to get him some sold out Foo Fighters gigs.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's great.
Amazing.
But yes, my big tip on app this month. Well, thank you so much. Really enjoyable conversation. You know, I'm sure it would be great to pick this one up again, I think, in about a year and see where we are, I think, because I think we're seeing, like you say, this shift. We know we've got a lot of challenges in retail, but the great thing is retailers can achieve these things. The technology is out there. It's about that getting that, like you say, sort of breaking through that noise and really understanding the things that make a difference. So we'd love to have you back, Sarah. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.